Well, welcome everybody to call number two. Very excited to be here in sunny Point Pleasant. And I guess we're in Manasquan, but who knows?
You're in Monmouth County.
Monmouth County. So just a quick recap. Last week we started talking about the mind and really what this whole course of self-mastery is going to be about. Got to understand how the brain works somewhat. And we got into our first challenge, which was discovering what purpose might mean and then what it might mean to ourselves. And so the way we scale this thing up, we're going to take about 5-7 minutes to talk about some of those challenges and those assignments that were sent in, just to hear from what you guys are thinking. And this word purpose is going to be used throughout the 10 weeks. You're not going to escape hearing about this many times, but here's just a few things that were out there this week. What is my life purpose? I believe my primary purpose in life is to raise my children and to be happy, kind, and respectable young adults. All right, so obviously that's someone who has kids. Mm-hmm. And that inspired me. I remember hearing a parent quote once like that, and the quote was, "I'm not here to get my kids to Harvard. I'm here to get my kids to heaven." So this sounds like some mom that I'd like to know about in our call here. And then she finishes up here with, "I feel I'm here to bring joy to others, but sometimes that can be a bit exhausting." Well, okay. Yes, it can. We'll be more on that in a bit. Another one wrote, "I find it difficult sometimes to know if I'm truly fulfilling my purpose. Seems my purpose is to make a positive difference in people's lives. I find joy in my purpose. I find it stressful at times, too." So very honest. And here we have, again, purpose involving stress. When you do something with purpose, it's to be done with a goal in mind. The simplest of day-to-day tasks, as well as the life-altering moments in life, have some purpose. My person holding those tasks should complete them with a purpose. In my opinion, doing something with an aim, intention, or reason makes that doing something and anything. I believe purpose means reason with value. The cause before the effect. It's why you do what you do. Adding value to reason gives you purpose. And if you read our journals and anything in our texts, we hear that, well, what are you making an hour? You're making $12 an hour? You're making $15 an hour? No, you're making, you know what, you're actually making what the value, you're worth the value of that hour. What number you want to put to it, that's going to be up to you. And that's why we say self-mastery is going to be a part of the end of your destiny. My purpose, first and foremost, to have God live through me and live out his will. Second, to take care of my family, friends, and team, all while spreading love and have a positive impact on as many lives as I possibly can. That sounds like a mission statement to me. So we like that one. We like them all. We're all just starting with this. Here's one for you. I served a brush with death, and God showed me that my new purpose was to survive. I translated that into a phrase, be there. Be there for people that need me. Be there in the moment, because you might not be there later. Being there was truly giving me purpose. It helps me get out of bed every day, because I know I need to be there for those around me. Now, that's not your average answer, but this person has some pretty good insight, I'd say, and it actually made me smile, because one of my all-time favorite movies, most people haven't heard of, but it's called Being There, and it's an interesting story with Peter Sellers, but it's Chauncey Gardner. It's really about a handicapped guy who almost makes it to the presidency because he's so simple, and it's a pretty cool movie. It's an old one, but it's a goodie. Another one of you said is, if you're not making a difference in this world, then you're wasting your time. Okay. We'll go with that. And so many good answers. You know, we can't use them all. But here's another one. Being determined, resolute, and excited for whatever task is at hand. All are tied into what purpose means to me. And so this is just our first brush with dealing with purpose. You might even know it was our national or was our ops word just 2 years ago. So that's what we adopted across the country from our operations department. Every year we have a word, and if you don't know our word this year, it's united. But we all just kind of dwell on, I don't know, John Gordon's book, you know, that one word. So let's get into the lesson. This whole segment on self-mastery is something that most of us have heard before, but really haven't put much time into. So I'm just going to start off with a little quote from Norman Vincent Peale. Now, this is from his book, The Power of Positive Thinking. He wrote this in 1950. I made a card when I was in college in 1975, and I've kept it this long. But here's the quote starting us off. There is no finer sensation in life than that which comes with a victory over oneself. It feels good to go on, fronting into a hard wind, winning against its power. But it feels 1,000 times better to go forward to a goal of inward achievement, brushing aside your old internal enemies as you advance. Now, that one always stuck with me because when you're a young college student and you're trying to learn everything you can about leadership, being positive has to have some kind of a definition. Norman Vincent Peale was a guru of his time. Today, you hear guys like John Gordon and his positive leadership team. Well, it's pretty much this book. And we say some of these early writers, you know, Dale Carnegie, Earl Nightingale, a lot of these guys, everybody just adopted what they're saying. It's nothing new, but it's just really putting it into action. I have this knowledge. What am I doing with it? Another one here on mastery. One can have no smaller or greater mastery than mastery over oneself. Leonardo da Vinci. And last week we talked about we're going to do a lot of quotes. We're going to learn from a lot of our masters out there in every category. And then, of course, here's one from a guy named Hertling. Leadership is influence, nothing less, nothing more. You can't influence anyone if your own personal habits aren't exceptional. And so I know everybody on this call has good habits. What we're saying is a good leader has more good habits than bad habits. We're going to be looking at both. And my job, I think, is going to be really to expand. And when people look at you guys, say, well, no, that gal, she's exceptional. And so that's really what we're trying to get to. We're going to have some good habits. We want great habits. We want exceptional habits. And how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to talk about that just even today. And there are a few that do hold us back. So I go back to that very first assignment we had, and one of the habits we talked about, you told me, that are kind of holding you back, the number one was procrastination. And you might say, you might remember I even addressed that saying, yeah, that's an act of self-hatred. And I bring that up because I'm going to bring you out into another little snippet here. We talk about procrastination. You also said, you know, lack of discipline. So what is that definition of discipline? I'm going to bring up an old Roman proverb, and this is from a book called Meditations from a guy named Marcus Aurelius. You might have, if you ever watched the movie Gladiator, you know, Marcus Aurelius was the one that Maximus was serving, and he was in charge. Well, he's a real person, and he wrote many things in his time. He was one of the most wise guys of his time, as they say. But this is what he said about discipline. Those who disregard discipline hate themselves. Well, that's pretty powerful. That was that procrastination. Goes on to say even that shame and poverty befall all those who let go of discipline. And if you hold on to discipline, you're going to receive honor and life understanding. So why don't we address a little bit more about this self-mastery? Why don't we talk about what we can do? And in doing that, I'm going to bring you to another book by this guy named Malcolm Gladwell. And several of you already talked about Malcolm Gladwell. He actually wrote the book Outliers. And he had a lot to have on this subject. And he explains this notion of 10,000 hours. Maybe some of you have heard of this, that any great talent you see up on stage, might be a musician, an athlete, actors, Olympians, they've all practiced behind the scenes for 10,000 hours. And you think about that, that's a pretty amazing observation. He has some science behind it, and he's written other books too. But if you do the rough math, for me to put 10,000 hours in something, that's about 4 hours of practice a day for 7 years. And that's every day. That's not taking a day off. So when we talk about this mastery, 10,000 hours, I really believe that there's something to that. And I want to illustrate that by telling you a little story about about a young football player, and this kid is a freshman in high school. And he's walking the halls. He's about 5 foot, 100 pounds, and he sees this guy who's recruiting the seniors for a scholarship. It's a big, strong guy with a nice overcoat and smells good, and he's in the halls, and this little kid asks this recruiter, who's a freshman, and he says, "Hey, mister, can I get a scholarship?" And this tall, strong, handsome guy looks down and says, "Yeah, no, son, you can't get a scholarship." And the little young man says, "Well, why not?" And he says, "Well, you're too small, you're too weak, and you're too slow." And so he kind of looked dejected. You know, the kid didn't like that word "can't." Not many of us do. But he said, "What do I do?" And he said, "Well, that's easy. What you got to do is you got to do push-ups, you got to run 40s, you got to lift weights." And so that kid's eyes brightened up. He ran home after school that day, and he told his mom. He said, "Mom, I'm going to get me a scholarship. And I saw a recruiter today, and he said all I have to do is do push-ups and run 40s, and I'm going to lift weights. And so can I use the garage? Can I open up the garage and use that for a weight training facility?" And his mom, who was just the consummate perfect mom, said, "Of course, son, whatever you need. That sounds really good. Sure. And how are you going to do this again?" "Oh, I'm going to run 40s. I'm going to lift weights. And so she was behind him, and so he was pretty excited to do that. So he cleaned out the garage, and he started weight training. And he went down to the football field, and he was running 40s. And maybe he was too small and too slow and too everything, but he was probably too stupid, too, because he never really asked how many. And so he'd run 40s until he'd throw up. And so he did push-ups until he couldn't do anymore every day. And so those 4 hours were starting to build up. And nobody knew about lifting weights, but him and his buddies started lifting weights. And all of a sudden, things started to change. And all of a sudden, he didn't know how many. He didn't have to count. This was his lifestyle. Oh, and by the way, they were getting better. And oh, by the way, then the first job this kid got was a lifeguard. And so what do you do as a lifeguard? Well, you spend most of your time paddling. You spend most of your time swimming, rowing the boat. And so you can kind of figure out where this story's going. After a bit, they even started working out in the morning, called morning sessions, Alabama drill, 6 a.m. before work. Intense 30-second interval stations, jumping, hurdle hopping, getting extra coaching. You know where this is going. Every year the kid got better. He got a scholarship. He went to college. He didn't just play college. He became an All-American. And not just 1 year, but 3 years. And so this kid was on his way. And he got an invite to the combine, the NFL. And that was the dream. And here's this kid who was too small, too weak, too slow. He's in the NFL combine. He's actually breaking a few records. And so what happens? He signs a contract. The dream. He got the dream. But in the first week of practice, he breaks his leg. And he's done. The dream is over. And I can tell you exactly how I felt at that moment, because I had to come back to the monks. I had to come back and put... And I stood on the bluff of the monastery, which is 1,000 foot. I came back to my monk mentor, Father Dennis, and I met with him out there. I think he thought I was going to jump off the cliff, and maybe I did, because it's what you call depressed. And you're going to see that most of us know about depression. Most of us know about PTSD. How do we overcome that? And so this was a defining moment, and my monk mentor at the time said, "Well, didn't give me advice, didn't tell me what to do, always asking questions." And he said, "Why don't you come to college? What is your degree?" And it was coaching. It was teaching. He said, "Okay, you lost your dream. Get a new one." Mm-hmm. How many times have we heard this? This isn't an unusual story. You've probably heard stories like this 100 times. But the whole point of the story is, no matter where you're going, you can't avoid hard work. You've got to put the 10,000 hours in. And you've got to have the dream. This is the beginning of self-mastery. When we start saying, "Okay, who in our group has this dream to own a store?" We have a founder, Peter Cancro, who's coming to tell us, "Look, if you want a store, you're going to get one. But you got to put the work in. You got to pass some of these tests. I want to look at you and say, you're exceptional. If you can do that, you're going to get a store." We have people on this call that have that store. We know that there are people who want multiple stores. What's the dream? There's a lot of intangibles to get there, but the one we already know is you've got to work that 10,000 hours. There's no getting around it. And so really that's the conclusion we're looking at here. And there's different really, we want to talk about some leadership models to help us get there. Now some of us have studied this. Some of us know. I'm going to go through some of the old models. One of the old models we call the autocratic model, the old school top-down leadership. It's done. We're done with it. It doesn't work. It's I'm big, you're small, I'm smart, you're stupid. That doesn't work. We know one that's fairly popular is called decentralized command. You learn this in the military. And it's team leading. It's like the SWAT teams. It's like one guy goes down, but the team keeps moving forward. That's why we love always talking about teams and teamwork. But the one model I'm really interested in sharing and the one that I believe works today and is probably the most popular model we call servant leadership. And it's effective because we see it in action all the time. We see it in our own franchise. But really to illustrate this, I want to kind of go through a story. But before I do that, I want to take you through a 7-minute self-mastery habit course. So get your stopwatch out, get your pen sharpened out, and here's what I'm going to talk about, some good habits. We talked about procrastination as the habit we want to get rid of. Let me tell you what happens when we wake up in the morning. How many of you in the morning, the first thing you do is drinking a big glass of water? Habit, 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 ritual, call it what you want. Get up and drink a big glass of water. Why is that? We talked about the brain last week. We got to keep the brain in shape. Water, 75% water. We've got to be hydrated. Nothing we can do more simple than drink water in the morning. And as you remember, we talked about that Eastern religion view. If my brain is turbulent, if the water is turbulent, I can't see, I'm confused. If it's calm, if I'm in that alpha state, if I'm in that theta state, I can relax, I can make better decisions. Second thing I'm going to do in the morning, and I just call it the power hour, and that is I'm going to sit down at my desk where I know it's quiet, I know there's nobody around, I can hear some crickets. It's early, it's 5 in the morning, but I'm going to meditate. And we said, well, what is that meditation? Meditation is just a simple 4-step process. I'm going to read something, and it could be from A to Z. I'm going to meditate on that for a little while. I'm going to pray about it, and then really I'm going to contemplate. Contemplation is something that we don't really talk about much. We don't really incorporate in our lives. If you stay in the monastery for any length of time, you learn what a contemplative life is. And that's what we call an inward life. We think different thoughts. But when I actually get a good spot in my brain and can contemplate, I can make better decisions. My brain is quiet, not like a lunch rush. But yet, even in a lunch rush, I can remain tranquil. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm actually going to take two cups of cognitive enhancer. You know, coffee, black coffee. People say, well, what about tea? Get tea. Doesn't really matter. Some kind of small stimulant, moderation and everything. We know that that really works. And then the next one, and I still have 3 minutes to go, it's the cold shower. Now, some of you say, well, now I know this guy's nuts. But I can tell you, we have Laird Hamilton coming to our national convention. I thought I invented this cold shower. I thought I invented the cool plunge. Wait till you see what this guy does. But the cold shower is amazing. Look it up physically. Try it out. Anybody that gets back to me and says, oh, I tried that cold shower. It changed my life. And it's like, okay. And just remember, we have the ocean here we can jump in. But if you need a cold shower, figure it out. Now, this is the quick version, but I got to create a shake. I got to start feeding myself. And it's not the McDonald's shake. It's not a chocolate shake. It's a shake that doesn't really taste that great. Okay, but it's a shake that my body needs. It's got the nutrients. It's got the green magma. It's got the polyphenols. It's got what my body needs. We can go through this individually. You know what it needs. You got to do the research, do some homework, be smart about it. Get the shake. That's what the body wants. Everybody says, okay, well, don't forget to brush your teeth. Well, when I was in high school, I learned to brush my teeth with my left hand. Was my right hand damaged? No. But we had a coach that said, look, I'm studying how the brain works. Brush with your left hand. Start doing stuff with your left hand if you're a righty. And today we now know what he was talking about. This coach Fioretti knew what he was doing. And he visualized, he taught us how to visualize, but he taught us how the brain works, and he didn't really know. It was just, now the science proves out. My left brain, my right brain, when I start doing anything with my left hand, it starts to have to work harder upstairs. And, you know, anything in athletics, well, you can do this as well. And then the last thing, I'm going to work out. I don't have to go over the benefits of working out, do I? And it doesn't really matter, but we have to do something. We have to sweat. Because I know when we sweat, this is really a chemical thing. And we're talking about chemicals like dopamine. And we're talking about chemicals like, you know, the stress hormones, cortisol. So there's lots of research we're going to do on this. You're going to hear a little bit about it. But this is how I'm going to design my morning, which really is going to design the life. Now, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just giving you some good examples of what we should do. And so getting back now, as a servant leader, we're all considering ourselves servant leaders. And I'm going to take a few minutes to tell you about a story of one of what I call a Living Day Saint. And that is a story of this guy named Mandela. So we say great stories move people. We have some kind of connection. And some of us are writing our own stories right now. At my age, my story's been written. I can't go back. I can perhaps help guide some of the younger stories that are being written right now. But I would urge you to just pay attention to just Mandela's life, because it moved me, and it continues to do so. I got to tell you, a while back, I read the book on Mandela called Mandela's Way by Richard Stengel. And Richard Stengel actually went to his place, wrote this book while Mandela was in prison. You probably don't know Nelson Mandela was in prison for 27 years. Not 27 days, not 27 months, 27 years for doing nothing. Never charged with a crime. But he opposed apartheid at that time in Africa. He was abused, attacked, he was punished daily. And I remember looking at his documentary, Long Walk to Freedom. And he was out in this little island called Robben Island off of Cape Town, like Alcatraz. He was there for 20 of those years. Imagine being on a little island and pretty much left alone, except for being beaten, you know, no real human contact, very few other prisoners that you saw. But what they did show in this documentary was actually his prison cell. And I really didn't notice it right off the bat, but I'm looking at this prison cell, and it was so tiny, and it didn't even have a bed. And you could see concrete floors. He had one blanket in there. But the morning rituals that this man started, I think, saved his life. And at every morning, 5 a.m., he would wake up, and he would run in place for 45 minutes. He couldn't do much else. This is a guy that was doing hard labor all day. But he'd do 45 minutes of running in place and then 200 sit-ups. That's his ritual. That's what you call self-mastery. But for 10 years, a whole decade of that, he would have to go out into the limestone quarry and break up the rocks. And because of that sun beating down on him and the torturous attitude that happened, he went blind just from the sun. So here's a guy that still has hope, and yet he's losing his eyesight. Probably the most moving thing I remember when I was reading this was the guards would actually bring him out and have him dig a grave randomly. Might be twice a week, might be three times a week. He'd have to dig a grave, and he'd wonder if it was going to be his own. Now you think about that for a moment and dwell on that kind of punishment and torture. And every now and then they would have him get in the grave, and he would lay down in the grave, and what the guards would do then, they would just urinate on him. Those are the same guards later he actually forgave. Yeah, how do you overcome that? Well, you choose to forgive, and that's exactly what he did. And really, the story finishes up. When he's getting finally released, he had to walk down a really long, they said they'd drive him down. It was about a quarter mile, but he said he'll walk it. It was a long path with a white gate at the end. It was a white picket fence. The entourage was looking down on him, and Mandela remembers thinking that if he didn't leave his bitterness and hatred behind, he would always be in prison. And his mistreatment really became his salvation, and he became a world symbol of peace. His cellmate that he had for a little while called him a great servant. And one of the things that he wrote down in his memoirs, Mandela, was, people have learned to hate. They can learn to hate. They can learn to be taught love, because love is more natural to the human heart than its opposite. And, of course, if you know any of your civic history, Mandela then All he did was become president of South Africa. He ended apartheid. He never lost his hope. And that was his personal legacy. And what I really thought was pretty fun in this whole thing was he befriended this poem called Invictus. Maybe you've heard of it. Actually made a movie out of it. And this is a poem written by William Ernest Henley 100 years earlier. And it almost fit what happened to Mandela. And the poem, I memorized the poem a long time ago. It's a pretty cool poem. But it just starts out, and it goes out something like this. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. And there's several stanzas that go through there, and it's a poem you might want to look up and take a look at. It's very moving. And at the end, it pretty much says, it matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. To me, when you look at people like this in history, modern-day type of thing, this is a guy that learned self-mastery. And maybe it took being in prison. Maybe it just took the contemplation. He lived an amazing life, one that we should know about. And so I'm going to lead that right into our next challenge. And so the next challenge for this week is really just going to research a character in history. And it has to be a short read. You can even Google a couple paragraphs. It doesn't have to be a book. You don't have to read a book about it, but it's amazing what you can find even online. But any area of interest. There are so many amazing stories. I can't read enough. I mean, look at the presidents alone. You got a group of 50 right there. But I'm talking about global leaders, military figures. It's intriguing to me. The saints. I'll pick out a saint and read them to my little five-year-old, and she can tell you a lot about the saints. And again, these are humans that have lived lives of self-mastery that are good examples for us to figure out how we want to live our lives. We were looking up some stuff I found from Confucius, and we're going to wrap it up here. And one of the things Confucius said was, good people strengthen themselves ceaselessly. Good people strengthen themselves ceaselessly. And we talked about this in our last session. Self-care is not selfish. We've got to learn how to take care of ourselves. The Eastern religions call this enlightenment. Shedding the shackles of self, C.S. Lewis. Shedding the shackles of self. Say that three times fast.
Say that.
But really, it's the ego. It's how do we put the self on the shelf and yet still have a servant heart? It can be done. Look at Mandela. You look at Gandhi. You look at the modern-day saints that are out there today. And you look at people right in your own lives that you know. And some of them are close, your parents, your coaches, some teachers you know about. So you have your challenge. Your quote of this week is going to be a pretty simple one. And it's from a guy named Socrates. I think he probably knew a thing or two. And he said, people who study others become wise. But people who study themselves become enlightened. So I have a tendency of going to Aristotle and Socrates quite a bit. You might remember who was the teacher and who was the student. I'll leave you with that. And that right there is 30 minutes. Hope that we hear some good stories next week, and we'll share those. Thanks for being on the call. All for now.
Thanks.